702 for the curious.
Streaming countrywide on the 702 app.
Welcome back. With 21 minutes to go before we get to 11 o'clock, I'm happy to be chatting to Bori Lekhranshi from, who is the head of communications, rather, at Doctors Without Borders Southern Africa. Good evening and thank you for joining us this evening.
Evening, Gershel, and good evening to the listeners.
Great one. Look, I mean, I've been going through, you know, this portion of your website, A Year in Pictures. And, you know, obviously we know that Doctors Without Borders, I'm not French, so I'm not going to try the official name. You know, you are synonymous with working in some of the toughest regions of the world. And clearly what you have done here is not to just go out there and provide the necessary treatment, which is far-reaching, but you're also telling the stories of the very patients and the people whose lives you are touching, whether they find themselves in refugee camps, whether they find themselves in war-torn scenarios, or whether they find themselves, quite frankly, just in desperate need of medical assistance.
Yeah, I mean, basically, maybe if we can start off with the French name. So, yeah, Médecins Sans Frontières, but, you know, many Anglophone areas of the world, we just know as Doctors Without Borders. But there's something that speaks to the origins of the organization and why we started working in this way is twofold, is to provide direct medical assistance to people in danger or in crisis, and also to bear witness to what we're seeing. And that's part of being there in solidarity with people in the situation that they are. So the reason why we work in, you know, why our teams work in these often dangerous or remote settings is because normal, average people are just trying to survive. And what happens is they're confronted with sometimes very aggressive attempts at making them not survive, either through a structural inequality or through a disruption of the healthcare system, through either conflict or social collapse or something of that sort.
And obviously, I mean, even just based on some of the photos, one can see that it's not just, you know, what would be referred to commonly as primary health care. You know, you're not just vaccinating and delivering babies, but what you are doing is, you know, you're doing surgery, you're doing orthopedic. I mean, there's this one photo that stands out for me of clearly someone whose arm had been torn to tatters, so it had been broken, you know, into little pieces. And you can see the orthopedic bits and pieces still sticking out of it, of trying to put this limb, or is it not even an arm? It looks like a leg, this yeah, limb together.
Yes, you're absolutely right. Just for the benefit of the listeners, so it's what you're looking at from the perspective of the photographer, and I guess we'll talk about that a bit as well, is that you can basically just see the portion of a patient's leg sticking out from the surgical garb that's draped over it, and then you've got these metal external fixators that's basically holding this person's leg together on the outside of the skin, and then the surgical team are indicating where an incision is to be made to do another bone graft. And the leg of this person, it's a man by the name of Yusri, and this photo was taken in Gaza in the Al-Adwa hospital, and he was shot by the Israeli army during the March of the Great Return protests last year. And in many instances, many of those patients were shot in the lower extremities, in their legs, and this obviously shattered the bone itself, and it's incredibly difficult to help a person recover from that. It requires repeat surgeries and it requires external fixation, and that's really difficult to keep these recovering wounds clean, to avoid something called osteomyelitis, which is essentially an infection in the bone, which then eventually would lead obviously to an amputation. It's incredibly difficult to provide that high level of surgical care in a place like Gaza that has been essentially blockaded for a number of years. And it's true also for some of the other places where we provide medical care, is it's incredibly difficult even to bring basic care to hyper-remote locations or to populations that are, in many instances, excluded from healthcare. And there, I think a good example of that is if we think of the exclusion and the aggression that Rohingya Muslims are experiencing in Myanmar. You know that 700,000 Rohingya Muslims are still in Bangladesh 2 years now after they were fleeing particular brutal violence meted out against them by the Myanmar security forces.
I mean, I look at this one photo, the first photo that you see, you know, a team of MSF health promoters goes door to door in Nuva. Capital neighborhood on the outskirts of, I'm not going to go through that name, it's a bit tough, but it's in Honduras from what I see in February 2019. And I mean, it's as simple as that, where people are just spreading awareness in terms of the assistance that they can get, all the way through from a lot of the photos that just, you know, tug at your heartstrings. A man, his child on his shoulders, looks to jump on a train as they migrate north through Mexico. And this is in December 2018. You know, talking about those, and both of those stories actually have a common theme there. You know, this idea of this human train or this human caravan that Donald Trump all too often talks about, that's just coming to invade the US. And you can see the sheer desperation that people either are living under or escaping.
And if we look at what's happening in places like Honduras, it's essentially people are being driven from their homes, from their communities, because of social violence, because criminal groups, criminal enterprises are making it unlivable for people. They get caught up in the crossfire. It becomes a difficult reality that they're trying to survive, and that's what's pushing them to leave. So it's not as if it's merely just an attraction to go to the U.S. because it presents you a better way of life. What is definitely a fact is that remaining there is going to be detrimental to your survival. And I think it's also analogous to what we've seen in Southern Africa since 2006, 2007, where the deterioration of the Zimbabwean economy, life in Zimbabwe, pushed many Zimbabweans to cross over to come to South Africa to survive, essentially. And so we can see that over the last 10, 12 years, well, we've become far more acquainted with the daily struggles of people who are fleeing in order to survive, and whether that's boarding a inflatable raft to cross over the Mediterranean from Libya into Italy. Potentially, people are taking incredible risks to flee unlivable conditions. And then when they're in such a vulnerable state, they're largely excluded from access to healthcare, and many times they're exploited. So when we talk about what's happening in Libya today, where people are being detained indefinitely, refugees or migrants, it doesn't really matter what you call them. They're, in essence, they're human beings like you and I, like our listeners. So we can't turn a blind eye to their suffering and the incredible danger that they find themselves in. I mean, just to mention again, so in October, in the middle of the year, rather, in July, there was an incident in Tejura, a detention facility in Libya itself. So during the fighting there, that facility was hit in an airstrike, killing 60 people who were being detained there and wounding 70 others. And a couple of days before that, our medical team was in that same facility providing medical care. And the conditions in which people were being held were absolutely abject. And so, yes, we were providing the medical care, but we were also using our voice, the voice of our field workers, our medical staff, to speak out about what we witnessed. So there's a French term for that. It's called témoignage, or to bear witness. And that's what we believe ultimately is our purpose, is to let our actions speak. So the ability to provide medical care in these difficult contexts, that is what speaks, because it uncovers what is the medical need, and how people are trying to, with some measure of dignity, survive. And that is our duty, is to provide the care, but also to bear witness to that, so that the world can't say that it did not know.
Ah, no, indeed. And that for me is the tragic bit when we have these conversations, is that large swathes of the world are unaware or choose to remain unaware at the plights of people. I mean, I'm looking at this one. Orthopedic surgeon Dr. Maria Teresa Ingala examines the x-ray of a patient injured by a gunshot to the abdomen. And this is in Yemen. This was taken in April 2019. And I mean, I'm looking at the size of that bullet, and that bullet is literally larger, or whatever bit of shrapnel is. I take it it's a bullet, but whatever wounded this person is larger than this person's spinal column, you know, that one particular vertebrae across. I mean, it's crazy what people are going through. There's another one, Ahmed, 38, a Palestinian man shot and wounded by the Israeli army on the 14th of May 2018, looks around an abandoned building with his children in Palestine. This was in April 2019 that this photo was taken. I mean, it's just devastating what people are going through.
Mm-hmm. It's true, but in the same respect, though, I mean, while people are suffering incredible hardships, there is something that's very inspiring. It's on that same page as we're looking at it now. There's a photo of a young man who's playing an improvised flute on a crutch that he's using while his leg is healing again using an external fixator. So it gives you a sense that there's hope within all of this.
Wow.
And often what I think is when we have a conversation like this or once people start becoming more aware of the injustice that people are living under or suffering, their struggle to survive, is that people start to feel powerless or that it's always too much. But in fact, people in that situation are not helpless. They still have their own agency. They still determine how they're trying to react to an environment that's hostile. So this photo of this young man playing this improvised flute while a young woman is singing gives you a sense that we can't look at people just with the view that they're these passive victims in a horrible environment. People have agency. What they require is they require assistance, often medical assistance, in order to be able to survive, to live a life of dignity. And human dignity is an important part of what defines our work as well. Is we're not these photos are not about us. These photos are about people trying to survive, and they allow us for a brief moment into their life to see what that is like, and then we have the duty to talk about it in an interview like this. And that is important because essentially, that's basically what drives our field workers, that drives the people who support us as donors, that drive our employees, is this human solidarity that cuts across borders or barriers. And how we're able to do the work that we are is it's through small donations by normal people around the world, 6.3 million people around the world, who on a regular basis donate small amounts of money to Doctors Without Borders, and that enables our medical work to remain completely impartial, independent, and neutral. And that allows us to express human solidarity through medical care.
And for me, that stands out because I'd like to obviously get into some more of the detail of how people can support, you know, MSF and you know, the work that you are doing. Because obviously, what happens is that this stuff doesn't exist within a vacuum. You know, unfortunately, you still have to work within an economy that demands the equipment that you need, the medication that you require. And all too often, as we can see from just these photos alone, without necessarily even plowing through long stories and aspects of the website, the issue is you can see that this is work being done in the most remote parts of the world. I mean, I look at another photo here that stands out for me immediately. A water and sanitation team visits the village of Ndlovu, in Ndlovu, to disinfect the house of local resident after they were diagnosed with Lassa fever. And this is in Nigeria. This happened in May 2019. And, you know, you look at that photo of this person in sort of a hazmat, full outfit versus these people looking on this person almost as if this person is an alien. And you can see that you are working in really remote parts of the world. And as you had said, it's not about you, it's about the people that you're assisting and also about spreading and telling us about their story and what they are going through. That is the most important aspect of it. I mean, you mentioned that, look, this is what drives you as a group, as an organization, the individuals even coming into MSF and working with you. But I mentioned this at the beginning of my show, and I'll mention it again. It's something that becomes a bit much when you work, whether it be through civil society, whether it be through state-funded organizations. It becomes difficult dealing with and working with sort of the tough and difficult bits of the world on a day-to-day basis. And MSF specifically goes out and looks for that. You're not working in Sandton Mediclinic. You work in the middle of refugee camps, war zones, and some of the most difficult places in the world. What drives MSF altogether, as an organization and the individuals behind it?
I mean, maybe the best way I can summarize it is I want to take us back to 2015. So on the 3rd of October in 2015, at around about 1 o'clock in the morning, our staff in a trauma hospital in Kunduz in Afghanistan were treating, and they were at that stage treating for probably over about a week, people who'd come in wounded during the fighting in Kunduz district. Uh-huh. Between the Taliban and international forces. And this included also many civilians who were wounded in the crossfire and hurt. So our teams were working straight through the night. They had for 2-3 days been working like that, and all of a sudden, 1 o'clock in the morning, our facility was hit by 129 rounds of anti-aircraft gun, high-caliber gunfire from a military plane that had been circling around the town, and it started firing on that hospital, and it killed 42 people. The majority of them were patients, 14 of them were staff inside that hospital trying to bring people to safety and to try and save their lives was a South African nurse, so Jonine Lotte. And after this whole incident, which made international headlines and caused a lot of discussion and also thinking about, like, well, how is it possible that a clearly indicated medical facility would be targeted by the military? It was a U.S. warplane that executed this attack. And I asked her a couple of weeks later, I said, Jonine, well, are you still going to continue working for us? Because to survive something like that, to go through an experience like that is unfathomable. And she said, like, yes, of course I will. Because if I don't go, people don't have access to care. And I think that sums it up. Well, it's difficult. It's a choice. There are limitations to what you can achieve, but not doing it is not an option for the staff that we have. And it's difficult. It's taxing. But you're not alone. You have camaraderie. You have solidarity with the people that you're trying to assist. Sometimes, yes, it will be dangerous and there are risks involved, but to be able to provide care where it's most necessary and at times where it looks impossible to do, even in the face of a large or the biggest ever Ebola outbreak, the reason why it's being done is because there are people there and they deserve to be treated. Doesn't matter who they are.
Exactly.
They deserve to have their stories told. And it's not about telling the story for a person, it's just handing them the mic.
I hear you. And that's the most important bit. And I think many organizations, at least progressive organizations, are becoming acutely aware of the fact that you pass the mic, you don't tell the story on behalf of someone else. Just very quickly, so there's a lot of people listening to our conversation right now. And sometimes well intentions do go wrong. So I don't know, someone would, you know, wants to donate money, which is probably the easiest thing to do. You send some money and, you know, end of story. Other people want to volunteer and they want to come along on the trip because they see these photos and you know, it's gut-wrenching and it really moves them. And I'll give people the link now so that they can have a look at those photos. But what is the best way that people can get a hold of MSF and actually assist? And what is it that you are requesting? Who are the people that come out and assist you in the work that you're doing? And you know, what is the process for, you know, wanting to provide remote assistance, alternatively being there in person?
No, I think it's a great question because in this instance, it allows us an opportunity to say, like, well, how do you get connected with us? There are basically three things that we ask any place where we work to recruit medical staff and other professionals to work with us in the projects in roughly 70 countries around the world, to potentially for other people in that society to become donors on a regular basis. Some people give a small amount every month. Other people are capable of being more generous. And then the third thing we ask is that people can support our calls for change. So often in South Africa, what we focus on is fighting for access to affordable medicines. So for instance, we don't just provide the medical care, but we're also concerned with increasing access to the tools that are required, be it diagnostic tools so we can ensure that in places like rural Malawi or in the DRC, we've got CD4 tests for people at facility level who often come at a very late stage of HIV infection and are at risk of dying within a couple of days. So the reason why their disease has progressed that way is because it wasn't possible for them to monitor the progression of their disease. So that's one thing. So we want to change something, and that's often it puts us at odds against pharmaceutical companies who are driven by profits. And so those are the three main components. So working with us, donating to us, and then standing with us when we're trying to change something in a society. Now, the first two, so working with us, the best and simplest way, if somebody's interested in working with Doctors Without Borders, is to visit our website, msf.org.za. Click on Work With Us, and it'll take you through a detailed process outlining what our minimum requirements are. So we need somebody who's at least got 2 years' work experience. Often if it's medical professionals, they need to have 2 years' working experience after they've done their community service here, if they're a medical doctor.
Sure.
So we also recruit midwives, nurses, logisticians, administrators, people working in communications, people working in advocacy, and analysis roles as well. And there's a large number of Southern Africans that are working with us. There's roughly 200 or so Southern Africans and East Africans that are recruited through our office in Johannesburg and make a career out of this to 100%. Work in many different places over
just
time.
Just very briefly, if you can just give us the website, because of time, we're out of time there, but sure. The website link.
So that's msf.org.za. And if people want to donate, the simplest way in which to do that is just by sending the word MEND, M-E-N-D, to 43845, and that gives us a monthly donation of 50 rand. So it's not a huge amount of money, but all those little amounts add up to make a big change.
Just repeat that number quickly, 43?
It's 43845, and what you should do is just send the word MEND, M-E-N-D,
100%.
To that number, and that gives us an instant donation.
Great stuff. Thank you so much for your time, mate. All the best to you, and thank you for sharing that with us. That was Bori Lakhanji, Head of Communications for Doctors Without Borders, MSF Southern Africa.